Thank you for joining us on this episode of Eminent Teachnology with Dr. Rochelle Newton and Drew Stennett, where we examine current and emerging technologies through the lens of diversity and equality. So hello, everybody, and welcome back to a new episode of Eminent Teachnology with Dr. Rochelle Newton and Drew Stennett. Today, we're going to be talking about the future of work, especially the future of work in this new world of COVID and hiring and people trying to find jobs and people not getting jobs and like all the, I don't know, great and awful things, or maybe awful and great things is a better way to put it. Can you talk a little bit about this, why this is on your mind, Rochelle?
Yeah. You know, so I read the newspaper, you know, all kind of news. I love reading the news and finding out what's happening, because I believe sometimes when they get it, when you get it through the nightly news or whatever media resource, sometimes they have to chop it up to make it fit in their time frame. Whereas if you read it on a newspaper, you know, in some people's case on the internet, you can get a deeper dive. And yesterday in the news, in the Charlotte news, they noted that Harris Teeter was cutting their hours. They were going from being open from 6 a.m. to 12 p.m. to, I think, 6 to like 8 o'clock or something. I don't remember exactly what the hours were. Please forgive me for that. But they were reducing their hours. And the two things that they noted was they couldn't find enough staff to staff the stores. And the staff that they had don't get days off or don't get very much time away from the office. And I was just, you know, perplexed by that. I was like, you know, so everybody made such a big deal about the unemployment thing. They were giving people and the $300 or $400 it was. I don't remember what it was, but whatever it was, they were giving people this. Mm-hmm. And I guess they're saying this was the reason why people weren't going back to jobs and things. But then I thought, you know, the other side, what possibly could it be that people aren't going back because they're afraid to get COVID? They haven't been vaccinated. They don't know that, you know, there are too many unknowns, you know, so even for the people who may have been getting the money, maybe there's another story besides just that they're getting an extra $300 a month, or I don't know, a week, or however much they get. I don't know what the answer is, but maybe that's why. But in the middle of COVID, so last year, we saw the country and most of the world shut down, right? Mm-hmm. So that impacted the economy, you know, just very negatively, right? So lots of things happened about that. When we made the turn, once the vaccine came along, we ran into a new problem, supply and demand. So the shipping and all the getting stuff in, you know, the whole process of how goods move around the world was impacted by COVID and still is impacted by COVID. The price of everything has gone up exponentially. I dare you to go any grocery store and buy your normal groceries, like your meat, your potatoes, you know, whatever you normally buy, and come out of that store for less than $50 to $100.
Oh, yeah.
A loaf of bread used to cost, I think, $3 and something. A loaf of bread costs almost $5 now, you know, and just think about that if you're poor, what that means for you, right? Or if you are disadvantaged somehow or another, what that means for you. And so what I thought about for work, so first, the future of work goes back to where we live in the world that we live in, technology, right? So technology is slowly gobbling up jobs, right? So, you know, algorithms, robotics, you know, all of these different things are replacing the need for humans, you know. So one of the things I talk about a lot is banks, you know. So it used to be you knew your friendly banker on the corner, you and him would have her would have a conversation, you get your loan done. Now a machine decides whether you're credit worthy and then tells the bank to grant you a loan or not. And if so, for how much? And, you know, so the fact that jobs are moving away from the traditional means into technology is one part of that. But the other part is where we are right now. So why do you think it is that there are so many job vacancies and so few people being placed in those jobs?
So I've got some fairly strong opinions on this. I know a lot of people blame the stimulus money, right? Like the government's giving people money, now people just want to work from home. But like the data says that that is not really the case, right? Like there are a few states that have said, well, they just cut back the restrictions, and like their unemployment or their employment rate did not really go up. Like there's a slight bump, like, you know, the number of people who wanted to stay home and just get the government money was not zero, but it really wasn't like very high. I was reading a really good article on this was about a line cook that used to work at a little like mom and pop restaurant. Like he was just worked on the line, mm-hmm. and he was talking about how like it was like his perfect job at the time before all COVID. Like he loved it. He could just go in. One of the funny things was he said that he liked that. Like the only times he would get in trouble was when he left work to go smoke pot in the parking lot. But that wasn't that big a deal. He said like it was mostly great. And then COVID hit and he got laid off. Right. Like the restaurant shut down. He couldn't go into work and it was a real bummer. So he had that little bit of stimulus money coming in that he was living off of. And then he got another job at a e-cigarette like vape shop. And he realized like, oh, this is what I really like doing. He wasn't making as much as he was working as a line cook, but he enjoyed it. And then when the restaurant did open back up, and I'll put the link to this story in the in our show notes, and I'll send it to you, Rochelle, because it was a very good story. When eventually that restaurant did open back up, they needed people to come back, and they wanted to hire this guy back. And he was like, no, I've got a better job that I like. And they were like, oh, well, we'll pay you, you know, $3 more an hour than you're making there. And he was like, no, nah, you know, I just don't really want to do it. I don't want to go back to a restaurant where I'm getting yelled at. There's a threat of COVID. Even if you've been vaccinated, like, I don't know that I would really still want to work at a restaurant with, you know, the heat and angry customers and all that. And he was just like, I found a better job for less money and it makes me happier. And I think that's fine. And I wonder if a lot of people are doing that. Like, is work shifting? Like, are things shifting out of these sort of service-based industries, which are high stress and low pay?
I think so. And I think the point that you made in that story was, you know, people are tired of being unappreciated. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you know, companies think, well, we give you your paycheck every month or whenever you pay, and we give you some benefits. You should be happy. You have a job. And one of the things I did when I started my company, and I've really been focusing on that now that I'm officially retired. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm still depressed about that or not, but now that I'm officially retired, you know, I've started focusing on my company. And that's one of the things that I hear most people tell me, you know, so the part of my company that does branding. So we assess people and ask them, so tell us about what you're doing now and what you want to do. Just like you were talking about that story, who the guy who was a line cook who went to do this and he found something else he liked more. And most people don't know what they want to do, what the thing, they know they don't like what they're doing now, but they don't know what they want to go do. And that's part of the problem. But more importantly, you know, so companies lose valuable employees because they do not value them. You know, you don't. So you give the little 1 or 2% increase per year, you give a certain, but there are instances all throughout the world where companies shut down for birthdays. Somebody has a baby, you know, they really do a lot to appreciate the employees. And I'm not suggesting anything so drastic. But I am suggesting that we think about employees in different ways, because if you want to retain skilled, committed, and dedicated employees, they are not just that employees. You know, one of the things I tease my hairdresser about is she calls me a client, and I have known her forever. Like, how can I be a client? I know all of your family knows all my family. We are always around you. You know, I help you, how am I a client? And so when we think of employees as their ID, their job description, their pay grade, we're doing them a disservice. You know, so yes, your immediate group of people that you work with know you are Drew Stennett. How far out in the organization do they know who Drew Stennett is? And that's, you know, in a company that the size of ours or yours, because not mine anymore, but in a company of that size, you know, it's probably unrealistic to expect everybody in the company to know who Drew Stennett is. But to lose Drew Stennett would be like them losing one of their key organs, you know, so, you know, the patient will still live, but, you know, you're going to need to do some dramatic things to keep the patient alive, you know. And so when you have employees like yourself and some of our colleagues in tech, they should be valued. And they should be valued in a way that when they come up with an idea or when they do something or suggest something, it becomes talk worthy. It becomes action worthy. It becomes escalation worthy, as opposed to, well, I'm just going to go do my job after these 8 hours. I'm going to go home and, you know, we'll start this nightmare again tomorrow. Thinking about employees, companies need to really rethink that. And with people not hiring, companies not hiring the way that I don't even know what the problem is there. I don't know why we still have companies that have job openings when there are so many skilled people in these areas that are looking for those jobs, why those still exist. But companies need to really think about what they're doing in that process, and it needs to be refined. Everything that we do in work, and specifically in human resources, need to be refined. So when I sent you all my goodbye letter, you know, a lot of people criticized me for putting my salary in there, but I didn't put my salary in there to brag. I put my salary in there so other people could go get their salary, could go get what it is, because human resources cloaks that information or hides that information. And for whatever reason, you know, you could be working next door to somebody who has the exact same skills, education, everything that you have, and they're making more or they're making less. They have other benefits that you don't have. That needs to stop. I mean, yeah, that really needs to stop, because in reality, we are at a place where the entire concept of retention of good employees is going to shrink further and further, because people are not going to want to put up with that. Like your example of the cook. Why would I want to come work someplace where I'm not appreciated?
Yeah. Yeah. That's and it's also, I'm not sure about North Carolina, but like in a lot of states, it's illegal to discourage people from discussing their salaries, because that's like, yep, a worker protection. Like that's how,
right,
that it's a good thing. Like people should know what other people are making. Like that said, I understand it's hard. Like it's also a way to have like people's feelings get hurt one way or another, but it's in the long run, it's for employee protection, so it should be protected, and it is protected by the law. Like that's, and again, I don't know if specifically in North Carolina it is, but in most states you should be able to discuss your salary, and the company should not be able to tell you not to do that.
and in most cases they cannot, but the problem is this is one of those historical things, right? Salaries was such a confidential thing way back. We haven't lost that. We still consider, you know, salaries confidential information. You know, it's like we don't talk sex and religion and money, you know, mm-hmm, at work, because these things are taboo for whatever reason. But in reality, you know, like, the way you correct the problems with pay inequity, especially with women and men, and then gender, I mean, ethnicity, you know, we know that for every dollar a white man makes, a black man makes like 50, 60 cents of that. A black woman makes 50 some cents of that. A white woman might make 70 some cents of that. Why? Why? You know, and it's like we were talking about a little bit earlier. So my husband is a school teacher and he gets paid peanuts. And the reason why is because early on, teachers were women, housewives, who came out from home and taught. And so we have these old guard ideas that we hold on to, and we move forward with everything that we do. And because of that, salaries stay low. People are paid indiscriminately different amounts and things like that. So all of those kinds of things need to change. And it takes people being brave enough to have a conversation with their colleagues and say, you know, here's how much I make, and, you know, here's what I do. You know, how can we help change this? So,
yeah, that's a really good point. And I guess one thing I think about when I think of salaries too is like traditionally, it's hard. Most salary increases are like minor, right? Like unless you're right, moving a job. So the longer you right, stay somewhere, the less of those like really big bumps you're going to get. And, you know, if you started with an unfair salary, then that unfair salary is going to stay with you forever, throughout your career. Right. And, you know, that, yeah, especially as bad for like minorities, right, who have traditionally had lower, because of all the reasons, you know, there's a million reasons, right? And they're going to start with this lower salary and keep that lower salary because they're just not going to get that bump unless there's some sort of huge I don't know what the disruption would be. I mean, the disruption could be a move or like go to a different job, like not work at the place you're working at, or something like, you know, knowing what everybody's salary is and having that as a, hey, look at this big gap. Like, that's bad. We can see it now. We have that flashlight showing it. Yeah. Like, yeah. It's very, it sucks.
Right. But even the bumps, you know, so when the structure of my organization changed, they gave me a 10% increase to absorb another person's role who was making way more than I made and his staff. So 10% of whatever it was didn't even equate. So they lost the big salary, right? So the person who left that big salary, they lost that. Mm-hmm. And they consolidated all of this under one person and did some restructuring. And that cost them 10% versus hundreds of thousands of dollars, which is what should have happened. So even when you bump or move or change, sometimes that amount of money doesn't actually correct the problem. It just perpetuates the problem. Pay inequality has existed since time immemorial, since women came into the workforce. And then when we had to recognize other groups, black people, brown people, you know, all these other things, we had to recognize them. The one part of the pay inequity that's really, you know, interesting is that Asian men make more than white men in the exact same job. And that's one of those stereotypical things, because people assume Asian men are the smartest men, right? Yeah. So how we got to that place and that it still persists is strange. But then more importantly, that the needle on pay equity has not moved, no matter how much light we shine on it, it stays the same. So when you think about work, work is such a complex thing, right? So some of us work, you know, work like where you work. We call it the golden handcuffs, right? Because they have great benefits, right? So many people stay for that and that alone. You know, you could have a terrible boss, but, you know, these benefits, you know, I've got to send my kid to college or, you know, whatever. So I've got to stay. And a lot of people get stuck in that trap, or they get into a place where, you know, if you have a gap in your career. So let's just say you didn't work for a year. A lot of employers frown on that. Why weren't you working? You know, they don't even consider that, you know, you're a human being. You could have had a baby, could have been sick, you know, could have, you know, been studying, went to get a degree, whatever it is. All of that could have happened, but instead that's a negative. So in reality, pay inequality persists and will persist until you, Drew Stennett, i.e. white men, do something about it. It is not going to change until white men do it, something about it. And is there any incentive for the white man to do it? Because literally white men, I'm speculating, but I think I can do this fairly. You assume, and you could tell me if I'm wrong, all the people that look like you and work with you, you assume you all have equality among you, right? So, you know, you and person X are paid close or very, very similar, or person X does something really different. So if they get paid more, you might say, okay. But typically, white men believe the spectrum among white men is pretty equal, right? So there's no real imbalances. Whereas the spectrum for all the other groups to get lumped into the category is out of balance. And there's no reason for white men to care about that, because there's no real factor on them. You know, it's no, if I get paid less than I should, what's the impact to you? And I'm not talking about you specifically, but to a white man, what's the impact? None whatsoever. It's of no consequence unless I have some affiliation with him. I contribute to his livelihood or something like that. There's nothing that matters about how much I make.
Yeah. I mean, and it's probably people just don't think about it. Like, I mean, I'll speak like personally, like it's not something I haven't spent really a lot of time thinking about other people's salaries, like white men or like non-white men. It's just sort of, and you're right. Like, I do assume that we're all getting like paid mostly the same, minus the in general, non-white men. Well, besides Asian men get paid less. And just sort of knowing that that is probably built in. And it's one of those things where, you know, you think about it and it's like, oh, that sucks. But at the same time, it's like, well, what can I do about it? And that's honestly not really a question I've asked until, you know, just now, like, what do we do about it? Like, that's, I guess it's another one of those flashlight things where it's like, oh, well, yeah, this has been here the whole time. But unless we really like look at it and think about it, like, I don't know, like what do we do? How do we fix that? Like how, as like a contributor to an organization, what should we be doing to make sure that like our peers are, you know, compensated on that the same way that the rest of us are?
Well, we have techs in collab, right? So that's mm-hmm. a start. I don't know how many people in. I think it's at some count it was 70. I don't know what the number is today anymore. But there's a place where there's a conversation can be started. And then from that conversation, people can come up with action items and things that they think could be done. I think that's one of the ways. I think that another way is to think about it a little bit differently. So let's pick on the imaginary, instead of Drew Stennett, I'm going to call him Crew Stennett. So Crew Stennett and Drew Stennett, right?
So he sounds like he wears a lot of like polo shirts.
I think he does. So if you could imagine that Drew Stennett is this white man with these things and he makes this much. And Crew Stennett is this white man with these things and he makes this much. Suppose you're wrong about Crew Stennett, or suppose Crew Stennett is wrong about Drew Stennett. We make so many assumptions about things that we don't know that are facts. There are probably white men who are paid less doing the exact same work that you are for various reasons. You know, who knows what they are, but for various reasons. And I think that we have to start chipping away at assumptions. We cannot let an assumption float because we don't know what to do about it, because we do not bring change if we do not think about how to change. So something simple as a discussion, first place, right? And so then if not a discussion, you know, or if not after discussion, you know, maybe a survey. Maybe if everyone in Texan Collab would agree that they would share their salaries with each other. Mm-hmm. And that could be documented somewhere. That then becomes a powerful tool to bring about change. You know, so maybe people will be hesitant. You know, you've got people who feel some way about that. So you may not get complete buy-in, but let's just say you get half the people in the team to buy in. That's leverage to go to the leadership and say, why is this the case? So the exact opposite of this is diversity in tech, diversify IT. It's great, right? So it started out with something that Bryn Smith came up with, this idea, because she, as a white woman, was paid and treated not necessarily fairly. So mm-hmm. she when her topic was even brought to the forefront, there was not a lot of excitement for it. Not a lot of people were engaged in it, wanting to do it, whatever. You know, so we went all the way up to Tracy to get permission to put that in Tech Expo. So she has this thing. And then when it's finished, she said, could we create a group called Diversify IT? Mm-hmm. And, you know, many of us were kind of like, wow, why didn't I think of that? But it was really a great idea that she came up with. And it grew slowly. I mean, very, very small, very slowly, to now you've got doctors and scientists and all kind of people contributing to this conversation that wasn't there before. That's how pay inequity, that's how discrimination, that's how, you know, gender bias. That's why all of these things start by little small groups of people doing very small things that make very big impacts. If you think about sexual harassment, so I grew up in a time where sexual harassment was so common. I can't tell you how many men have asked me to sleep with them for my job. I mean, it's almost like, okay, this is a part of the job, you know. And fortunately, I've never done that. I'm a bit of a prude, so that would not be something I would do. But think about how many women did concede to doing this. It took raising awareness that this was happening for us to get the laws that we have now that make it against the law to sexually harass someone on the job and all the other types of discrimination. But these quiet discriminatory practices such as pay inequity, job promotion, you know, all of these other things aren't going to change until groups of people get together and start standing up and screaming about them until they become regulated. So there's been a lot of talk. So last year, 2019, I should say, there was a lot of talk about pay inequity, and I thought it was going to gain some traction in Congress. Mm-hmm. It fell flat. You know what? Because they're stuck with pay equality broadly and minimum wage, and they sit at crossroads from each other, right? So you can't have pay equality and minimum wage, because if you're saying that it costs the minimum wage is whatever it is today, and that's a living wage for some group of people, pay equality for people who are in another pay grade or pay range where they're not living below the poverty line becomes too hard of a problem for a Congress to tackle the way it is. So you've got to pull it apart. So that's my suggestion.
Yeah. Do you think that there are, and I mean, I think the answer to this is no, but like, are there non-monetary ways for companies to show like appropriate appreciation for their like employees? Like on one hand, I feel like, I mean, we're all at work to work, right? Like we want to make money. I don't think any of us are going in to like do it out of charity. And so on one hand, I feel like, you know, money is the biggest, if not the only thing. And if it's not money, then like, then what is it? And if it's not money, is it even important? Like
it is, you know, so there have been so many studies done that suggest that people would work for a good boss and pay would not be the decider. If you work with someone you really like, they cared about you, they cared about your family, they cared about you as a person, money doesn't become the top tier of why I'm here. It's here because I enjoy where I work. I feel valued. I feel like I matter. And so in the workplace, and I don't care who you work for, I would say probably 60 to 70% of managers, and I would even lump myself in there, are terrible managers, because they become just like robots, right? Somebody up higher than them tells them to go do something. The manager goes and tells something. And I read this great quote, you cannot manage people. You manage projects, not people. That was so perfect because for so long, we thought about that. You cannot manage a person. So just imagine this. So you have a manager, right? And so that manager says, okay, I'm going to pick on crew standard again. Okay, crew. So here's your work you've got to do today. And here's all the things I expect. And here's your performance review and all these things that he says, right? So under the classic theory, he's being managed. But from the moment that crew standard walks into the office, crew standard is crew standard. So he might have a cup of coffee, go to the water cooler, go smoke a cigarette. You know, he may spend some portion of his time doing nothing that he's supposed to be there to do.
Yeah.
And so you can't manage that, because that means you'd have to follow crew around every minute of his day. And there was a study done at Duke that said 12% of their employees do 90% of the work. Now, if you think about those two things. So those other 88% are crew standard, right? So they're, you know, on their breaks, they're visiting with their friends, they're on their phones, they're playing games, you know, they're surfing the internet for their next job. You know, the majority of the employees are crew standard. The majority is that guy. So in order for companies, that 12%.
That's a very small number.
That's a small number. Shout them out. Recognize them, engage them, give them opportunities to grow without making it onerous. So in other words, I want to promote you to the head dishwasher, but grow them into the head dishwasher and ask them if they want to be the head washer. What I mean by grow them, give them all the skills that they need to be the head dishwasher, and then find out if they want to be the head dishwasher. If not, where else can you redirect those skills, right? So you know, you get sent to conferences, a couple of conferences a year. You could take a course here and there. Who looks at that and then assess what crew standard is? So, oh yeah, crew standard took a blockchain class. He took some Python classes. He took some cybersecurity classes. His supervisor sees that he's taking all these things because he or she had to sign off on it, but nothing ever came of it.
Yeah.
So how do you, so you recognize that employee and you assess that employee, how can I grow this employee for this employee and for the company?
Yeah.
And that's what my company does. I'm keep bragging about my company. I love
it. Oh, do it. Oh, that's awesome. Thank you for listening to Eminent Teachnology. If you like the show, please review, subscribe, and recommend us to your friends and family. We'd love to hear feedback from you as well. You can email us at eminentteachnology@gmail.com. See y'all soon.